Buccaneers fans, the sage of Tampa Bay sports is here. The countdown to kickoff is on, and it's all presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford dealerships a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. But let's get to the star of the show. He's the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richey, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeCamper of JoeBucksFan is here to chop it up, as Ira says, about all things Bucks and beyond. And Sage, right now, that 2024 Ford Bronco that everybody wants, you can order it online at BillCurryFord.com. BillCurryFord.com. That's one of the vehicles in the concierge customer service plan that you can just order online with help from Bill Curry Ford. And Sean Sullivan, the GM, is going to give you $500 just for doing it. That's how it works at Bill Curry Ford. So easy, no deposit. But I was talking to GM Sean Sullivan there, Ira. Inventory is full. Back to the pre-pandemic levels. They've got vehicles you can test drive. You can touch them and squeeze them. Every new vehicle comes with a nationwide lifetime warranty. And reach out to Sean Sullivan, the GM, directly at BillCurryFord.com or at the dealership. He'll give you the Ira Kaufman discount. He will help you, though, more importantly, like you're a family member, help you with whatever guidance you might need. Maybe it's body work, service work, BillCurryFord.com. And Sage, we will be at Big Storm Brewery, Clearwater, 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton Road, opening day, Sunday, September 10th, against the Vikings. Watch the Bucks with the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports. Fun times, covered outdoor seating, indoor seating. They're open every day, of course. You can get there before that and check it out and have a great meal. All the great Big Storm beers on tap, their spirits, find them all at BigStormBrewery.com. But Ira, you'll be out there fired up. And what do you have to say about that, Ira?
Well, while I'm doing that, Lee will be right at the game as the underdog Bucks roll into Minneapolis. And I'll be checking out this new menu. I'm coming early, and I want to see all my Buck fans out there. Rock Riley could be out there. You could show up. You never know about Sean Sullivan. Very much looking forward to it. 1 o'clock kickoff, right, Steve?
We're telling fans 11:45 a.m. 11:45 a.m. When Iris says new menu, it's the same great menu, and you can see it at BigStormBrewery.com. And the menu of all the tap rooms: Ybor City, Cape Coral, Orlando at the Amway Center, and Pasco County. But you can also we're going to have some specials specifically for the Bucks pregame kickoff. So come on out there. Sage will be schmoozing. And Sage, we'll talk about them later, but our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration. Man, they've got 25 plus years experience in the insurance industry. That means if you have damage at your home or your business, they know how to fight for you to get the money that the insurance companies and their corrupt ways want to keep from you. So Florida's Elite Restoration.com, check that out and put them in your disaster plan right now. We'll talk about them later. Ira, I got a question, Lee. I'm confused. You know, I don't think preseason games are worthless like Lee does. We can debate that one day in for a whole episode. However, I don't know if I've ever seen a more worthless preseason game than I just saw on Saturday night. Ira, with all your 90 years watching the NFL, was that the worst preseason game you've ever seen?
It wasn't, Steve. It wasn't, because I thought the Bucs played a decent game. And if one side plays a decent game, then it's not the worst I've ever seen. Now, look, Steve, I go back to 1985, preseason football in Tampa, Lehman Bennett at the helm. I've seen some bad preseason games and a lot of bad regular season games. You know, it was a snoozer. I talked to a couple of people that fell asleep during the game, and I kept waiting to see if Baker Mayfield was going to play, and he never played. And it only reinforced my report from 10 days ago that it's Mayfield's job in Minneapolis, and he's going to be under center. And then, lo and behold, you know, Todd Bowles is asked about it and doesn't quite know what to say. Comes out the next day, doesn't know quite what to say. Steve, this thing looks like it's not going to be announced until after the third preseason game. I really don't understand it.
It's getting comical now. I'll just go ahead and say what I've basically been saying since the offseason. The immortal football axiom: if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. And if you cannot decide 20 days from the regular season opener if Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask is your starting quarterback, if they're in that kind of a dogfight that you can't pick a winner, you're drafting a quarterback in the spring. That, to use the line I used on JoeBucksFan.com, that's like Sam Kinison screaming, "We're going to draft a quarterback in the first round next year."
Well, let me throw this back at you, Lee. You know, Dave Canales, if he was on the line with us, he would say, "Well, hey, that's what we had in Seattle last year, and Baker Mayfield's probably a better, more established talent than Geno Smith was, and Kyle Trask is every bit as good as Drew Locke, and we made the playoffs, and we found a franchise quarterback. So how about that?"
Well, Dave, you got to convince me that having a guy take less snaps with your first-team offense, when your best player on offense is begging for more snaps with the starting quarterback, how does that help you?
Steve, I'm starting to wonder if there might be a disagreement at the brain trust level. You never know. The Glazers could be thinking about this one way. Like, he might be thinking of it another way, and you would think the decision comes down to Bowles in consultation with Canales. Maybe there's a little bit of disagreement at the top. Mayfield's going to get the call, but the fact that he hasn't said anything and probably won't this week makes you wonder, maybe there's a little difference of opinion at the top. Maybe the Glazers are weighing in a little bit here, Steve.
Well, Ira, you know, you mentioned that to me before. Just to backtrack a hair, I personally think it's a joke. I agree with Lee. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. And what Todd Bowles, his public stance on this on Sunday and Monday, the silliness of it all and just the way it was put out there, a media relations nightmare of a gaffe, just to either say they're still competing, we're still evaluating, and then that's that, and we're glad they're both playing well enough to still be fighting each other, or just, you know, don't say anything. But what we heard was just goofy kind of stuff. You know, we'll leave it at that. Sage, as far as the disagreement at the top, how could they have not have decided from a Glazer stance weeks ago? Like, basically had a meeting with the Glazers and say, "Look, hey, this is the plan. We're going to let them fight it out, and this is our timetable for naming a quarterback. Are you cool with that?" And my guess is they said, "Yeah, absolutely." So I think they've already weighed in.
Well, I don't mind the Glazers getting involved when you're naming a new head coach. I mean, that's their prerogative. It's their team. They have that right. But Lee, when it comes to naming a quarterback or who should win any position battle, I don't think ownership should have a vote. And quite frankly, I don't think Jason Light deserves a vote either. That's up to Bowles and his staff. Otherwise, you're going to take that away from Bowles? Why is Bowles even there, Lee? I don't understand. This should be Bowles' call. And as far as I'm concerned, he made it by not putting Mayfield in the other night.
And I also wrote this umpteen times during the offseason. Bowles needs wins, or his career as an NFL coach is done. He's going to be 60. He's not going to get a third chance unless he works for somebody, coach gets fired midseason, whatever, you know, interim basis. Who is Bowles going to trust his career to save his career? A guy who has won a playoff game, or a guy who's thrown 9 passes total in the regular season? I mean, come on.
And Steve, this might be unpopular. Maybe I'm wrong here. I watched the game. You know, let's not go overboard about Trask. He played decent. He played decent. This ain't Patrick Mahomes. They scored 13 points. Now, they missed the field goal. Okay. But they scored 13 points, and the touchdown they scored, Lee, was a tipped ball. I think the defender might have got his hand on that ball, too. And it was slightly underthrown. So
a hair underthrown, yeah.
I'm not knocking Trask. He played decent, but he wasn't lights out.
To my point, that, you know, Bowles is going to go with a guy who's got a track record. And people will say, no, you dumb idiot. You know, the Bowles is going to a guy who gives you a chance to win. Well, I agree with that if Trask was head and shoulders better than Mayfield. He's not. With Trask, I've always said, he's got to be like Russell Wilson when Russell Wilson was a rookie with Seattle. They had zero plans on starting Russell Wilson. They invested big time in Matt Flynn. They had a seasoned quarterback in Tavares Jackson. And they went with Russell Wilson because he played and practiced so well they couldn't pull him off the field. The rest is history. Trask has not done that. Trask has improved a great deal. Trask has improved from a USFL quarterback to a competent backup in the NFL. You know, maybe Trask will be this quarterback someday. He'll be the next Joe and John Elway, and we'll look back about all this and how dumb we were. He's not there yet. It's not there.
Steve, two more points.
Wait a minute, Sage. Wait a minute. I can't let you off the hook so quickly, Ira. Come on. Trask played a great game. Look who he was playing with. Look at the numbers. Look at each play. Look at the drops. He played a fantastic game, Ira. He's not Patrick Mahomes. No, this wasn't a highlight reel game. And that touchdown pass was a good throw. It wasn't some gaffe by a defender. That's an excellent play. And I thought he played excellent football, Ira. I really did, considering who he was playing with. And he showed mobility, escapability, scrambled a little. I mean, I thought he played a great game for Kyle Trask. And if he had played this way last year, and this is my point, Ira, if he played this way last year in a preseason game, it would be totally different because this was a much better football player out there. Not saying he won the starting job, but I just got to say that, Sage. And part two, which I definitely want you to chime in on, but you can say whatever you want because you're the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports. Part two of that is, I think we were looking at this way too black and white. The Bucs may have decided, and part of this elongated phony competition may be because they've already decided if Mayfield doesn't play well early, we're going with Trask after the bye. So if that's the plan, then we got to give this guy his share of reps all summer and see what we got and extend this thing into the preseason and let it run its course, and that's that.
All right, I don't know where to start over here.
Thank you, Ira. Thank you.
Maybe I didn't see the final score. Maybe it was 33-6. I don't know. I saw 13 points on the board, Lee. That's what I saw. Number two, suppose crazy things happen, Lee. Suppose the craziest thing happens. They go with Trask in Minneapolis. Wouldn't Mayfield at that point be sulking and basically saying, wait a minute. I didn't get a fair chance. I didn't play in game two. Trask played almost the whole game. Where's the fairness? That's number two. And number three, and it goes to Steve's point, I think there's something to be said for this. If you go with Trask over Mayfield, I think you're going to lose Mayfield. He's not going to be a happy camper. I don't think that helps your locker room. Then if Trask struggles, you bring in Mayfield, I think that's a problem. You work it the other way around. Hey, if Mayfield's good, you stick with him. If he's not, 6-7 weeks, you're 2-4, you put in Trask. I think that's a much, much more comfortable situation than vice versa, and I think that's a factor.
But couldn't you argue the same way, opposite? What I mean by that is, if Trask doesn't get the job, is he going to sulk? And you know, these guys are screwing me over. I got no chance here. I want to get traded, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't think so, Lee. I don't think so because going in, nobody gave Trask much of a chance, no matter what the Bucs said about an open competition. Most people didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. I still really don't believe it. I think this thing, I think the fix has been in for a long time, but they had this certain way they wanted it. I think they had a certain way they wanted to do it. I think the fact that Mayfield has some history, he's won 11 games in a season. He's won a playoff game. He played very well against the Chiefs on the road in the second playoff game. Scared the bejesus out of Kansas City. I think with that background, him getting beat out by Trask on an announcement, I think would be devastating for Mayfield. I don't think he can recover from that.
You want me to be very blunt here? I know Steve does. You want me to be really blunt here? Could one reason the Bucs haven't officially knighted Mayfield as a starter, they don't want to hurt Kyle Trask's feelings?
It's possible. And that goes back to Steve's point. In the back of their minds, they might know, hey, there's a decent chance we might need this guy this year. You can't go into the season thinking, hey, Mayfield's going to light it up. We're going to give him a chance. But, you know, he's coming off two bad years, injuries, and you never know. So you got to keep Trask's confidence up, and confidence in management, confidence in his teammates. That could be a factor, Lee. Could be.
And you know, they may have told Mayfield when he was signed, before we sign you, our expectation is that you're going to win the starting job, but are you okay with splitting reps and having a competition all summer, maybe even through the third preseason game, because we want to see what we have in Trask? Are you good with that? And he may have said, yeah, absolutely, no problem. I'm not worried about that clown. You know, that, who knows what he said?
I've been looking at Mayfield, Lee, body language, whatever, and I'm not an expert, but I think he looks like a guy who knows that he's going to start game one.
Very telling. Jason Light was on the Buccaneers Radio Network pregame show. He was asked about Kyle Trask. He never framed Kyle Trask, never said it. And they talked about him for, you know, 90 seconds, which is a lot in the radio world. Light never framed Kyle Trask as competing for the number one starting job. Never put it in those terms. He talked about Trask. He doesn't need to be Superman, and we just want to see him move the ball and all the kind of things you don't say about a guy who's going to be your starter. It was a question and a follow-up, and I think a second follow-up.
I didn't hear that conversation, Steve. I'm glad you did. Lee, I don't think we're still going to be talking about this next week. I mean, God knows we shouldn't be. And Lee, just to bring up a corresponding point, Steve's observation that Trask played a marvelous, fantastic football game.
Fantastic.
For the most part. They still can't run the ball. It's a big problem. And I didn't see that much other than one run by Tucker that changes my mind. They can't move bodies at the line of scrimmage. It's going to be a big problem.
Well, I'm just going to sum it up. We all know Bowles wants to run the ball. Bowles is a child of the 80s and 90s. He grew up in ground-and-pound football. He played in ground-and-pound football with Joe Gibbs, worked for a ground-and-pound coach, Bill Parcells. He's a ground-and-pound kind of guy. He's a 90s kind of guy. That's who he is. That's his DNA. He's a defensive guy. Defensive guys, they worship the run. Everything's about the run. That's who he is. Saturday night reinforced what I've been screaming about all offseason. If you're going to be a run team and you did not go out and address the running backs when you had the worst running attack in the league, you got a problem. And I think Saturday night we saw the Bucs have a problem with the running game. So if the Bucs and Bowles plan on running the ball, you better plan on 5 wins. If that. Their best running backs, from what I saw, and you know one of my pet peeves, you know, people screaming, "Oh, you got to block. Why aren't you blocking? If you block, well, hell yeah. I can run through a freaking hole that's as wide as a truck." No kidding. The running backs should be able to avoid people. You're allowed to break tackles. You're allowed to avoid tackles. You're allowed to run people over. The NFL lets you do that. It's not that much flag football anymore, or yet. You can still do that. Damn it, why don't people understand that? And Sean Tucker showed he can do that. This Ronnie Brown showed he can avoid tackles. Snick Vaughn can't. This is going to be a horror show, I think, this running attack. I really do. It's going to be a horror show. And why the Bucs? You know, they wanted to run the ball so bad, but they didn't address that. I don't know, but that's one reason why people think the Bucs are low-key tanking. They think they're low-key tanking because they're banking on Mayfield. They think they're low-key tanking because they didn't address the second worst hole on the offense.
2 weeks ago, I said, quote, "I want to see more out of Keyshawn Vaughn. Give him the football." Steve, 2 weeks later, I got this to say. He's showing me nothing. He's showing me nothing.
I hear you, Ira. I hear you got Lee loud and clear here, everybody, but it's still not the...
He might have trouble making this team, Steve. He might.
I don't think so. They're still not the first team offensive line. It's not. I'm not blaming the running backs. I'm just saying that from an overall evaluation standpoint, as far as the Bucs running game, I agree that these guys, Vaughn is not doing enough, no question. But you're still running like this past game. You got Nick Leverett, who's an undersized, barely good enough to be a backup center. He's not. And you've got the left side of the line is all backups, and you got a rookie in there still figuring it out in Malk, and you got Gedeki. I mean, you can't run with 3.5 huge holes on your offensive line, so I just can't judge it yet. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know if Rashad White has taken a step that a good rookie would into year two. A lot of running backs have exploded in year two. Devonta Freeman was like that. Other running backs, I don't know what he's going to do. I don't think he's going to be special like they think he is, but I mean, if they can't scheme up a way to run behind Tristan Wirfs and Matt Filer, then they've got some serious problems, and it's going to be ugly in a hurry. I just don't think I can judge yet until I see the first team line out there.
I granted a little patience is called for, Steve, in the preseason. We haven't seen Wirfs. Wirfs is their best, maybe their best player overall. I think he is. I agree with that. But on the other hand, Steve, I don't have a lot of confidence right now. Yeah, maybe the running game can go up to 23rd, but I just don't see it being a fort. And, Lee, I don't see defenses respecting play action. And Phillipucks can prove that they have a dependable running game.
That's why he was tailing football. There's all kinds of data that shows just faking. You can have a trash running attack, which the Bucks had last year, and you can fake to the run, and you still have an advantage in a play action. And there's all kinds of evidence, and the most glaring evidence was the Bucks were one of the top teams last year in play action passing, yet lunkhead SpongeBob didn't want to do it. I don't know what to say about that.
The good news, Steve, is that the wide receiver core, which we had no idea about this 2 months ago, looks like they're fairly deep. Steve, we know the top two guys, arguably the best tandem in football, or maybe top three. You know, Seattle's guys are very good, too. A couple other teams, maybe Miami, has, a heck of a tandem. But all of a sudden, Steve, I think the pleasant surprises are on the guys that are catching the ball. It's been very positive in that regard.
I hear what you're saying, Ira, but it's the same thing every summer. Somebody's got to catch the balls that go out there. I don't know. I like Palmer. Obviously, he's got consistency, and he keeps getting better, and he's dangerous, and, he's just exciting. I like his attitude as well. Having talked to him a few times, I think he's just he's got that tough guy, diva-like attitude that we haven't had around here in a while that I think serves a lot of wide receivers very well. I don't know about the other guys, but in reality, it's still the strength of the team. Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, that's still the strength of the team. Want to pull up this, Ira, because I think it's important, and you said it very well when you said, yeah, I think they can get up to the 23rd ranked running game. And I agree with you completely that they can do that with better scheming and with the talent that they have. That's not any great accomplishment, but go back to 2016, Ira. 2016, the Bucs were 9-7. That was the year after Doug Martin had his strong year, and he didn't have a good year at all. The Bucs ranked 25th in the NFL in running, and the reason they finished 9-7 was because for some reason Mike Smith's defense was the best third down defense in the National Football League. And that's what got them, along with Jameis Winston connecting, not for huge yardage, but connecting with Mike Evans and getting enough done where they were able to go 9-7. I think they can do something like that again this year.
You're right. I mean, that was a weird stat with that third down defense because, it gave a lot of Buck fans hope. Hey, wait a minute. This Mike Smith defense, it's going to get better and better. We got young players. And then we know what happened, Lee. The next 2 years were horrible on defense. Steve's right. I think 2015 was Doug Martin's big season. And 2016, he did nothing. Yet they won 9 games. You're right. Steve, wasn't that the year that they went into the final 2 games with a chance to make the playoffs and they lost to Dallas? Steve, yeah.
That year, Doug Martin averaged 2.9 yards a carry. 2.9, leading the Bucs with 144 attempts. The leading rusher was Jaquizz Rodgers, 560 yards. And that was that. And again, 25th ranked running game, and they found their way to 9-7. And, Jameis Winston wasn't a Pro Bowl quarterback that year. He had a solid year for sure, but, wasn't tops in the league. I mean, it can be done.
It can be done. And one of the most pleasant takeaways from Saturday night's win is they're getting takeaways. Talk about a nice takeaway is that they're getting takeaways. That helps.
Delaney can't bank on it.
Yeah, you can't bank on it. They say it comes in bunches. Look, they got to do a lot better than last year. A lot better. They just didn't have enough interceptions. Not nearly enough interceptions. Look, I know interceptions are down across the league. A guy picks off 6 passes, he might tie for the league lead. That would never happen 25 years ago, even though there were less balls thrown. But that's when you can hit receivers and rough them up and stuff and tip balls. It's a totally different game. Steve, point is, can the Bucs go 10-7 with the 23rd ranked running game? A lot would have to be right and fall their way. The defense would have to be top 5. There's a chance.
I agree. There is a chance. There's a horrible division they're playing in.
Bowles has not forgotten how to call a defense. It's his forte. No, he's good at it.
Very, very good defensive coach. You know, when I question about his quarterback and his offensive philosophy, that's not to suggest he doesn't know what he's doing on defense. He's an excellent defensive coach. I just don't fundamentally like what he wants to do on offense.
They played a more crisp game Saturday, and I think that's worth mentioning. They weren't nearly as sloppy as they were against Pittsburgh.
And I'll bring it
the Jets out of the end zone.
But Sage, you said comes in bunches. Storms come in bunches this time of year. And that's why you have to have a storm plan, and it's got to be Florida's Elite Restoration. Not just storms, flood, fire, mold, whatever it is, you call them first, 24/7. They've got their emergency services team is going to get out to your property, give you a free evaluation, absolutely free, and then you know how to proceed. If you need their services to restore your property and you make an agreement with Florida's Elite Restoration, they'll give you $500 back if you mention the Sage when you first call or Joe Bucks fan, so that's great. But more important, they're going to get your property restored, and they will work with your insurance company to get that money because it's a battle. You can't go it alone. And don't call your insurance company first. Call Florida's Elite Restoration and then proceed from there. And don't wait because you have to address these things quickly or you won't be covered. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Josh Martin's the owner there. He's got all this experience as an insurance adjuster, so he knows the game on both sides. Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Sage, a year ago today is when Tom Brady returned to the Buccaneers. So as we sit here, you know, just assessing all the stuff we've been assessing, think about what it would have felt like if we had a starting quarterback just gone for 12 days or whatever it was. I think it was 11 days, maybe 6 or 7 practices. And just, you know, just your perspective on what that hole really created or what that means to you now a year later when you see, man, look at all the things that have happened with the team in 11 days or so.
Well, we suspected it at the time, Lee, but we didn't know it for sure, and now we do. Lee, that was a big, glaring neon sign, Brady's absence, that he was completely distracted. And it only got worse. As the season went on, it only got worse. Lee, relationship with his wife, his business travails distracted him. Other things, and his laser focus, Lee, which was a big, big part of his unparalleled success in the National Football League, just wasn't there. It wasn't there. I told you I had a guy in the middle of the season say, and this guy was in the know with the Bucs. Ira, except for the 60 minutes on the field every week, Brady's life is a complete mess. A complete mess. That was in midseason. And we saw it play out, Lee. He is human, ultimately. And he had some major, major issues to deal with. And it affected him. He finally showed his frailties. That 10-day absence, Lee, which to this day, a year later, is still unspecified. You know, there's a lot of rumors that he went out of town, he was in an island somewhere, it was a vacation, he promised his wife. Lee, why would he promise a vacation in the middle of August? Why would he do that? That's not Tom Brady.
Trying to save his marriage, that's why.
That's not Tom Brady. Do the vacation in July. I'll do it in August. And, Lee, that was the tip-off right then and there that it was going to be a long season for the Bucs, and it turned out to be exactly that.
Well, I've always made the contention that if he blew out his ankle and he was gone for 11 days because of his ankle, what's the difference?
One's voluntary and one's involuntary. A big, big difference.
Well, he's
difference.
Still gone.
Big difference. Big difference.
I don't see a difference. If you're gone, you're gone. Doesn't matter if you got a hangnail, if you got a lawsuit. Gone, it's gone.
Well, in case one, he chooses to be gone. In case two,
still gone.
Lee, you're not addressing it. You're not addressing that.
I don't see a difference. Gone is gone. It doesn't matter why you're gone. You're gone. You're
well,
there.
Well, I guess the question then would be in this hypothetical is why would he leave the team with a bad ankle? Why wouldn't he just scooter around and stay in meetings and do all the things that another player would do?
Well, he wasn't another player, number one. Number two, you know they would have let him stay home. But regardless, I don't see how that would have affected his play in November and December. Now, I don't disagree with what I was saying. You know, away from the game, he was messed up. I would sure like someone to come forward and explain how that affected his preparation. I mean, give me specific examples. Like, oh, he used to work with the offensive line at least 30 minutes a day on Fridays, and he quit doing that. You know, I want to hear some specifics. I don't want to hear, you know, guesstimates. And, man, that San Francisco game, he sure looked like he was into the game to me. I you know, it could be wrong. It was the other guys that weren't into the game. I think they tuned him out. Now, if you want to blame that on him taking his vacation, well, I think that says more about his teammates than it does Brady. I don't think Bowles handled it properly. Leftwich, as we found out, was a total incompetent and so far over his head, he couldn't breathe. Total mess. And you want to blame it on Bowles, want to blame it on Brady, want to blame it on Leftwich, want to blame it on, oh, everybody's crutch, the offensive line. There's all sorts of examples why it was a mess. I just cannot sit here and honestly say, because Brady wasn't there for 10 days, that screwed the entire season up and he couldn't play right in December.
I just think it was an indication of where his mind was, you know, in terms of total commitment. That was Tom Brady. One other point, Lee, that you mentioned all the factors last year. I'll throw one more in there, Steve. You're never going to be able to prove the value of it, but Bruce Arians took a huge step backwards last year and wasn't nearly as involved. And we saw what happened with the offense. I'm not saying 1 + 1 = 2, but the fact is, Steve, Arians was missing in action for most of the season.
Well, Sage, it's important to note, now this is one of the things I wanted to say, is that the Bucs started 2-0 last year. So whatever fans are looking at now, Todd Bowles had the team ready to play against two very difficult opponents on the road. So I do have a lot of faith that the team will come out strong and ready Week 1. Bowles has proven that he knows how to do that. So I do feel good about that. As far as Arians stepping back, he didn't really step back very much until later in the season when they kicked him off the field. And I think things changed. I mean, it was Week 2 when he was, you know, running around with a play sheet and barking at Marshon Lattimore and getting punished by the league and stuff. So, and he was at all those training camp practices. I don't really know. Nobody knows why Todd Bowles even allowed Leftwich to continue late in the season. Nobody knows why Brady didn't just say, hey, this isn't working. We're not going to do it anymore. It's all a mess. And we're moving on, Sage, moving on in this new year. Ira, I think we'll get an announcement on the quarterback before Saturday's game. But that's just if I was had to wager. I think it will come at some point very soon. Regardless, Ira, we're going to talk about this more in the next podcast. But really interesting scenario, and I think it's actually great for the Bucs, and I think Todd Bowles knew this. You know, the Ravens, they go all out on preseason, and they play tonight, Monday night, in preseason. They haven't lost a game in preseason going back a lot of years. The streak is 24 in a row. John Harbaugh has them coming out there and just, you know, they go all out, and that's just how it is, even with Lamar Jackson being their quarterback. So Bowles knows his team is going to get phenomenal work on Saturday night. Do you think that's had any factor in how he's handled these preseason games?
I don't know. I think you might be taking that to the extreme, Steve, looking ahead and saying, well, wait a minute, we're going to get a heck of an effort from the Ravens. First of all, that streak is crazy. I mean, it's just crazy. Lee, you know for a fact, nobody remembers your preseason record. Nobody does. As a matter of fact, I remember in 2002, Steve, I think I'm right about this, the championship season, I think it might have been the final exhibition game. They the Bucs lost 40-10 to the then Redskins, I believe. It might have been Spurrier's Redskins.
I think you're right.
I can't remember if it was the next to last preseason or anyway. Steve, I don't think Bowles is circling the Ravens game on the calendar. Steve, I don't think so. I hope you're right about this announcement before the game on Saturday. Lee, I'm not sure we're going to get that announcement till maybe a week from today.
That's crazy. I wouldn't put it past Bowles if he waits till friggin' Wednesday of game week. Honest to goodness. Because, you know, Bowles is a defensive guy. Like I said earlier, he's a child of the 80s and 90s. You know, he wants to keep the other team on edge. Ooh, they got to prepare for two quarterbacks. Think about that. Tell me that doesn't sound crazy from a defensive coach pulling and stunting like that.
Steve, do you think I'm wrong that if the craziness happens and they go with Trask?
Stop with this. Stop. You said this before. I can't entertain it again. It's crazy. Come on. You already know what's going to happen, and you give me whacked out hypotheticals. Once was enough, Ira. Once was enough. I got to put it out. I got to put it out there that I know that Lamar Jackson doesn't play in every preseason game, but he has in the past, and likely he will play against the Bucs. He's not playing tonight. I didn't want people screaming about that or you know, trying to wager tonight because they think Lamar Jackson's playing. Sage, we would be remiss if we didn't remind everybody to go to Bill Curry Ford. They will meet or beat any Ford dealer's best offer or give you $500 cash. All the details at BillCurryFord.com. Just shop there today. Make them your first choice when you're looking for a vehicle. You will not regret it. Family owned for 60 plus years, 63 years, I believe. Sage, a little younger than you. Not too much. Ira, Baker Mayfield, you know, the report came out on Friday that he is basically beginning the process in the court system to either eventually sue or try to work out because his family's not being cooperative. Apparently his father and his brother work for an investment firm and they were managing $12 million of his bucks and he wants to know where the money is. And it's just a sad, sad situation where you've got a guy who's, you know, imagine what it would take to get to the point where you have to file in court to get your father and your brother to explain to you where your money is because you don't know. It's just really sad for him. And the timing, it was filed on Tuesday in court. And I have to believe, Ira, I put it out there. A lot of fans didn't like it, but you know, I don't really care if the fans like it or not. To file this on Tuesday in court, if you didn't know you were the starting quarterback, why would you be so foolish to stick something out there in public that makes you think your life is a mess and is not putting you in a good light, even though it's not your fault? And just why would you introduce chaos when you're waiting for maybe an ownership group and a management group to decide that you're the face of the franchise? What do you think of that whole thing?
That's a fair point, Steve. I go back to the, you know, the body language. I think he knows what's going on. I think he knows what announcement is going to be made. Lee, this thing about your own family, I mean, that's as depressing as it gets. When Brady was losing money through a certain business venture, it wasn't his family. It wasn't his father. This puts a whole different distraction level to it, an annoyance level, where basically you can't trust your own family. I mean, you got to feel for what Mayfield's going through. He's got plenty of money. I understand that. But the fact that he, you know, took such a step as he did a week ago, boy, that is potentially a giant distraction. I hope he can overcome it. Let's get this game done, and we'll start talking about the Vikings, Lee, for 2 weeks, as we should.
I know you're big on distractions. You're big on, you know, you're almost as bad as football coaches when it comes to distractions. You think these football players have an attention span slightly better than a housefly. And Mayfield, and you're right, Mayfield, with his dad and his brother, potentially doing shenanigans with $12 million, that's a pretty huge deal for Mayfield. That's a whole lot worse than Brady losing $30 million in some crypto scam. I mean, Brady can make up $30 million in the snap of a finger. He can make one phone call and make that $30 million up by, you know, promoting whatever, Gatorade, Nike, whatever. Boom, there's $30 million. Mayfield? No. And having that happen with your dad and your brother, this is right up your alley for distractions. Now we got to build an excuse for Mayfield to stink because he's all baked out because his family potentially is playing shenanigans with his money.
By the way, Steve, you mentioned the Ravens. One quick point about Saturday's game. I hope Lamar Jackson plays, and I hope he plays a half. And I hope the Bucs' first team defense plays that first half. Yep. And I'll tell you why, Lee, because in week two, not so much Kirk Cousins in week one. They got to play Justin Fields, Lee, in a game, Lee, that you would think the Bucs would be favored in. You would think. If they're not, we got big problems in Tampa. A home game against the Bears. Justin Fields, he's a handful, you know, out of the pocket. I mean, the guy ran for 1,100 yards last year. I've been reading some stories out of Chicago, Lee. They think they got a very explosive offense with DJ Moore. Now, wait a minute. Don't give me the word explosive with the Chicago Bears, but DJ Moore's a good receiver. I would like Lamar Jackson to play and the Buck defense to get an idea of what it's like to try to contain a guy inside the pocket, because God knows Justin Fields boy, he is as shifty as Lamar Jackson, maybe even more so.
Ivor, that's a fantastic observation. Less than a month after you play Lamar Jackson, you're going to face a similar type of quarterback. Maybe I'm dead wrong. You know, I don't follow the Ravens. I don't follow the Bears. I have a one-track mind. I have tunnel vision. I monitor the Bucs. The other teams, I don't really monitor at all, you know, outside of watching games. That's it. So I don't know if our friend Todd Monken is running the offense in Baltimore now. I don't know if he's trying to turn Lamar Jackson into more of a pocket quarterback or if Monken is molding his offense to suit Jackson's traits, which is outside the pocket. I don't know that. But regardless, just the threat that Jackson has to roll out and damage a team, that's very much setting you up to play against Justin Fields, not the next game, but the following game. And that's a great observation, Ira. It's a fantastic observation. Good call.
Sage, I can't give you credit because I wrote about that when the schedule came out. So it was just
Never saw that article, Steve. Never saw it.
I don't believe you, Sage. I don't believe you. Hey, even more important, perhaps, because it's possible the season, we don't want to think about it. But I guess, either way, it's an important game. The week after, you've got Jalen Hurts in week three in Tampa.
Right.
So
right.
It makes it even more important. But Ira, fun stuff. And of course, fans can hang out with the Sage himself and argue with him if they want to at Big Storm Brewery opening day against the Vikings. Come on out, 1 o'clock kickoff, get there early. We got specials, we got the Sage having fun. Our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration. Get there now, floridaselite-restoration.com, and Bill Curry Ford, the giant. We're not even 2 months from opening up there, Ira, the huge redesigned, reimagined Bill Curry Ford. They're open now, though, of course. Great construction sales and pre-Labor Day sales going on. Final thought, Ira, what say you?
I want to pick up on what you just said about Bill Curry Ford, because we're there quite a bit, Lee and I, visiting. There is a palpable sense of excitement there among the crew, and they got an excellent staff over there. Steve, sometimes these businesses do capital improvements. They half-ass it because of finances. They don't want to put that much money in. Lee, all three of us took a tour. We saw how ambitious the plans are. When this thing happens, which it will in a couple of months, this will be the greatest dealership in the Tampa Bay area from top to bottom. You got to go check it out. And Sean Sullivan, Lee, where else can you go and talk directly to the general manager? That doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. Yeah, you could talk Bucks or you could talk 150s. He's equally fluent in both. So I'm looking forward to Big Storm Clearwater. On September 10th, we're going to have a blast. We're going to celebrate a Buck victory. That's what we're going to do.